You're a wizard, Harry.
Welcome to the Harry Potter Book Club for the Prisoner of Azkaban with
Sarah Tompkins,
Vijaya Shrestha,
and I'm Michael DeMauro. This week we discuss Chapter 6, Talons and Tea Leaves. We delve into Professor Trelawney's past, and the battle for the Quidditch Cup continues. Welcome back for another week of the Quizzitch Cup.
Quizzitch Cup, meow, meow, meow.
Everyone's favorite segment where we quiz each other for points and then one of us gets a Quizzitch Cup maybe someday.
Maybe.
Or a cake, it's fun.
Or a cake.
It's delicious. At least you can't eat your cup, you can eat your cake.
Actually, that was actually made of milk chocolate.
What?
This week, Sarah gets to ask the first question.
Do I really already?
Yes.
God, it feels like just yesterday. Or just 3 weeks ago. What wood is the firebolt handle made of?
Damn it. It's fucking broomstick questions.
Vijaya?
Oak.
It is not oak.
I knew it wasn't. I just guessed.
Ding.
Michael?
Is it ash?
It is ash.
No.
Did you have that as one of your questions?
Nope.
Okay.
He just guessed. Goddamn, Michael.
Did it have a diamond hard polish as well?
Stop, it did. How did you know, Michael?
Because I read the book like yesterday.
Fucking Michael.
I have a very good, really great short-term memory. Or okay. Not. All right, it's me.
Okay, maybe I great. Should just, you know, I have like 5 questions from the movie that I had disregarded. Maybe I should bring them all back.
Bring those back.
Michael wouldn't get it.
I also watched the movie last night.
No, you didn't. Stop. I haven't seen the movie in a million years. Oh, crap. Okay, I'm ready.
I doubt you get the answers to the questions that I wrote down, though.
Right, okay. Well, that sounds like a challenge.
Because brief history of time. Okay. Which, actually, now thinking about it, is that's a pretty, like... it's Alfonso Cuarón, so it makes sense. But, like, good on you, whoever threw that in there, if it's a prop department or the director, because obviously time has a big, big deal in Prisoner of Azkaban.
Okay, are you guys ready for my
question?
I'm ready. What does Hermione find in the Bogger trunk during the finals?
Oh, shit.
Sarah Tompkins.
She finds Professor McGonagall telling her that she has failed.
That is correct.
Oh, Hermione.
Hermione.
You're back.
What?
All right.
Okay.
Vijaya.
Is it my turn?
It's your turn, Vijaya.
Oh, which ones am I going to... Yes. Okay. In the movie, what's the Gryffindor common room password at the start of the school year? Yeah.
Fortuna Major?
Yes. Good job. I was going to say, I think it was in the book, too.
I think it was.
It was also that in the book.
I actually did not do any password questions for this year.
Well, we have quite the contest going. It is Michael with 8. Sarah jumps up to 5.
God damn
with
2 it.
Correct
I have
answers.
No
and Vijaya got 3. See you guys next week.
Bye.
Chapter 6. Talons and Tea Leaves.
Okay, so we're in the Great Hall. You know, we had that whole, like, weird Dementor thing happen recently. It's the first day of classes. Everyone's super stoked. Well, you know, mostly stoked. Harry and his friends walk in. Malfoy is pretending to faint, and it's kind of a bummer because that's really uncool. He's pretending to faint because he's pretending to be Harry, you know, being... scared/attacked by the Dementors,
which so rude.
It's so rude because they're terrifying and gross. They run into Hagrid, who is carrying some dead animals, but is very excited for his first class, because he's teaching his first Care of Magical Creatures class. His excitement makes Ron very nervous, because what is going to happen? So they're getting ready for the first class of their third year, which is divination. Yes. Divination, as it turns out, is super hard to get to. It's in the North Tower, which apparently none of the third years have been in the 3 years that they've been in the same place every single day for nearly a year. I know it's a big castle, but it's not frickin' Scotland. You can explore a tiny castle.
But I mean, they have like moving staircases.
I
wouldn't take the chance.
Anyway, so they're wandering around looking for the room when they pass this portrait of this sort of portly knight who appears to have fallen off his tiny horse. And he sees them looking at him and obviously rightly assumes that they are judging him. So he challenges them to a fight.
And who wouldn't?
He's like, oh, you're not schools. And they don't want to fight him because he's a portrait. Apparently his name is Sir Cadogan, which I forever pronounce Cadogan. So that's interesting.
Did you well, like never cardigan? Listen to doesn't the it audiobooks? Look like, doesn't it?
What's no? I read it a billion times, and then I was listening to the audiobooks recently, and they're like Cadogan, and I was like, "What? Well, it looks like cardigan. I'm sorry, doesn't it look like cardigan?" And when you rightly assume that was Cadogan, well, cardigan is spelled cardigan. Yes.
Well, to your defense, the audiobook I think also pronounces Voldemort as Voldemort. So
Voldemort. Anyway, so remember. Sir Cadogan. The knight of presumably some table, whether it be round or otherwise, challenges them to a fight because they're teasing him for falling off his tiny pony. And when Harry's like, I don't have time for this. We have to get to this class. Can you help us get to the North Tower? He's like, oh, a quest! Surely we shall go on a quest! And he's very excited, and he makes him follow him, and he runs past some ladies in crinolines, and they get to the North Tower, which is a tower. But
in the north.
There is, yeah, so it's like, you know, like a round room. And they look up and there is a door in a ceiling, essentially. And it says,
like a trap know, door?
Professor Sybil, yeah, it's like a trap door, except that for them it's not a trap door because it's
like looking, a cellar looking door.
Up at it. Yeah, you know, whatever. I don't know what you would call that. Some sort of ceiling door, attic door,
tower
attic,
door.
Whatever.
Trap door?
Well,
I just said trapdoor.
But it's not Jesus. A trapdoor. It's not a trapdoor if you're at the bottom of it. It's only a trapdoor if like you're on
a,
the top of it.
It's a tower door.
Anyway,
it's fine.
So it says Professor Sybil Trelawney, divination. So they're in the right place, clearly. And Ron's like, how are we going to get up there? And right as he says it, this ladder drops down. And they climb up.
Magic?
She must have foreseen it.
She must have. Or she has a nanny cam. Anyway. Ugh. So they climb up, they get up there, and so Professor Sybil Trelawney's divination room is a room like no other. It's very hot. It's like kind of, I don't know. In my mind, I can think of it like as like very sultry and smoldery, and you know, there's all these like round tables all over the place with crystal balls on them, and it kind of has this red light cast about it, a little bit spoopy and mysterious, you know, and. They first see Professor Trelawney, and Harry describes her as a very thin woman who resembles a glittering insect, which is quite the picture. And so anyway, she tells them, you know, to get ready that they're going to see into the future, all of this stuff. And she starts making these predictions, and she tells, you know, she says, very ominously that one of the class will not make it to the end of the class, you know, that one of our number will leave us before the end of the year.
Whoa.
Yes, very, very scary. She turns to Pavarti Patel and says, beware of a redheaded man, which makes Pavarti immediately start doubting Ron, which is probably a good thing to do. Lavender is worried about something in October, apparently, because Trelawney tells her that something, the thing that she's dreading is going to happen on the 16th of October.
That's so
and
ominous.
Neville is predictably a clumsy jerk. And so she's like, you're going to break one of my teacups. And he breaks a teacup, but that's not super predicting the future. Anyway, so, you know, she tells him to get these teacups, to fill it with tea, then to dump the tea out, which seems like a waste. But she wants him to look
at it. Why can't they drink the tea?
Right. Why shouldn't, can't they, like...
I feel like that would make it more magical if they drank the tea. Like that
would connect like they're ingesting it's like informing their future, right? I mean, it would be kind of gross, though, to drink leafy tea. Like, there's a reason you don't want loose tea. You put it in a bag, you know?
But the leafy tea even settles at the bottom.
The lees.
The lees
settle at the bottom. Anyway, so she has them dump out their cups. They have to look at the tea leaves, the lees that gather at the bottom. And, you know, everybody is trying to look. Some people are better than others. Apparently, Hermione does not have an aptitude for this, but she also thinks it's a load of BS. So she's just not trying very hard. Ron thinks that maybe Harry's going to work for the Ministry of Magic because he sees a bowler hat. But he also sees an acorn, so it could be a windfall, meaning he'll get tons of gold. Harry predicts that Ron is going to suffer but be happy about it, which is a line in the movie that is delivered by Ron but is actually delivered by Harry in the book. A little trivia there because he sees a wonky sort of cross.
Ooh, that'd be a good question for Quidditch Cup.
That'd be a very good question. Anyway, so they're predicting all this stuff and Trelawney comes over and she's like,
I'm not going to be happy about it.
So Trelawney meanders over and she's like, oh, it's not a bowler hat. And then she's like, oh, there's this horrible thing. Don't tell me. Don't let me tell you. Tell me not to tell you. Tell me not to let you know. I don't want to tell you. And they're like, oh. And of course, immediately Dean Thomas is like, what is it, madam? Or whatever he calls her. I don't know. I almost said sir, but she's not a sir.
Professor?
Anyway, she's like, it's the Grim, which means Harry gonna die.
I wish everyone would have been like, yeah, please don't tell us.
Yeah, right. Like, I don't want to know, please. I would like to keep my future fogged, because unfogging the future is the name of the book, and would also be a great quizage question. Quidditch crop.
I have a premonition. Whoever wins this Quizich Cup will have a terrible future.
All right,
keep going.
Man, I hate to be that person.
That'd be horrible. Anyway, so they are looking at that. She's like, you're going to die. And everyone is really freaked out. Harry's like, well, this is not great because I totally know that not only do I have Voldemort after me, I have this other crazed dude who for some reason wants to murder me. I don't know why, but apparently Sirius Black has escaped prison, and after years and years of suffering, he's finally escaped, and I'm the person he targets, which just seems wrong. Anyway.
Everything happens to Harry, you know?
God, why is it always me?
Why is Harry's life so hard? Anyway, so Hermione's like, this is a load of BS. They leave, because Trelawney's like, this is the end of class, we have to go. Which is a very mature thing for a professor to do.
Of course,
they leave, and they go to Transfiguration with Professor McGonagall. Professor McGonagall, it turns into a cat, which we knew she could do, but it's still pretty impressive. But nobody seems really impressed by it. They're learning about something called animagi. Which I always say animagi, but like, or animagi, I don't know.
Magi?
Anyway, they call it animagi, is how they say it in the audiobook. Which is like this lame thing that's not important at all, where people can turn into animals and stuff like that, but don't worry about it, it's just like a passing thing. Anyway, so they're not super impressed that they're turning into a cat, and she's like, what gives, guys? Usually this is like the big reveal. This is the showstopper. And they finally tell her that, you know, Professor Trelawney predicted Harry was going to die. And McGonagall is like, God, guys, she's the worst. But she doesn't say that because she's like, I'm a professional, but as a professional, she's the worst. And she tells him that every single year, Professor Trelawney predicts the death of a student and no one has died. Which, by the way, seems statistically unlikely given Hogwarts, like, safety standards.
Right.
I feel like there would be at least one death every 6-7 years. I don't know. Anyway, that helps Harry feel a little bit better because McGonagall makes a joke about, oh, if you die, you don't have to do your homework. And I in my head, I'm like, and everyone gets an A. But I don't think that's how that works, even though that's what they say. So anyway, after Transfiguration, it is time for Hagrid's class, guys.
Hagrid's class!
And it's his first class ever, and he is so excited.
Is he nervous?
He's nervous but excited. He wants to sing a song because he's so nervous but excited. I don't know. I'm just saying that. I don't think he actually does that. Anyway, so he's very excited. He gets there and he finds out that no one could open their scary monster books. They're scary, chompy, evil books. He's like, why couldn't you open them? You just stroke its spine. He strokes its spine and it just plops right open, which is a little weird, but he thought that they were so cute.
It's kind of funny though, right?
It's real funny and I feel so bad. Hagrid's like the one who's like, oh yeah, it's super cute. It is super cute, even though it's like really terrifying.
Somebody should tell the guy at the bookstore, don't you think?
Right, like, why didn't he get that instruction? Why wasn't there, like, a note? Why wasn't there packing instructions, like, from FedEx? Usually they're, like, you know, they can tell you if it's fragile or flammable, but can they tell you, like, bitey until stroked? Which is
why didn't
a weird
the instructions
thing to say, I guess.
Come with the books?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
At the Wizarding World.
This is worse than that time that they bought all those invisible books of invisibility.
It is worse than that time, which is pretty bad. Never mind. Different story. I was like, I just thought of something which is not related to Harry Potter. Don't worry about it.
I have a question about this later.
Okay. Remember that. Put it in your brain spot. Anyway, so they can't open the book. They open the book. But he is very excited, even though he was very disappointed about not having his class be able to use their books and being terrified of them because people have like put them in like tight bags and put belts around them and all this stuff. Shut them with like clips, like binder clips and stuff like that. Hagrid brings out a dozen hippogriffs.
That would be a good quizage.
That would also be a good question. Maybe someone
should have paid attention to this freaking chapter, huh?
Right? Who would have paid enough attention to this chapter? Do you guys know what hippogriffs are?
No, what are they?
They are half horse, half eagle.
That must have been a weird breeding program.
All pride. God bless America. Which part eagle, which part horse? No one knows. Actually, everyone knows it's like the front part of
the front
eagle.
The front is eagle.
But horses aren't even native to the United States.
Although, by the way, I don't think it's half horse, half eagle. It's more like maybe like three quarters horse, like half eagle, because there's like
three quarters,
like,
one
it's
quarter.
Like it's like mostly a horse but head of an eagle with wings, so
but it's got the talons and the wings.
It does have the talons and the wings, but like it's a lot of horse too though. Is it like maybe it's like three quarters horse, three quarters eagle?
that's one and a half beasts.
It's like, you know, that's fine, right?
Sure.
Okay, anyway, it's 6/4, whatever. Yeah, 1.5, whatever. Anyway, so, like, introduce these hippogriffs. Hagrid's like, these super beautiful animals are also super dangerous. You have to earn their respect. Otherwise, they could tear you to shreds with their foot-long talons and pointy, pointy beaks. Who wants to pet them? No one wants to pet them. So Harry feels really bad. He's like, okay, I'll do it. Even though he has, like, the worst track record of anyone in terms of beasts and dying and death threats. So Hagrid's like, okay, you got to go up to it. You have to maintain eye contact. You have to be super respectful. And you have to bow to it. Harry does all of these things. It's looking like this hippogriff, who is named Buckbeak, by the way. It's looking like Buckbeak isn't buying it. So Hagrid's like, oh, you gotta back away. But all of a sudden, Buckbeak bows. And he allows Harry to pet him. And everyone's like, okay, we can do this. Yeah, it's really, really sweet. So all the other kids are like, you know, petting him. And It's like some sort of weird etiquette lesson that J.K. Rowling's trying to teach us about being respectful and nice and bowing and petting.
If you want to get to know a girl, bow to her first.
That's what I'm saying.
But then if she bows back, don't immediately go to pet her. That's
apparently
weird.
Apparently Newt Scamander never got this lesson because he can't maintain eye contact with a single creature. Anyway, so Malfoy actually, like, follows through, does the bowing thing. But apparently, hippogriffs can, like, speak the Queen's English because he starts insulting them. And the hippogriff he insults freaking lashes out and just slashes him.
Well,
and
he can probably tell the tone, right?
Probably. Maybe it's more of, like, an aura presence thing. Either way, this hippogriff knows that Malfoy is insulting it and calling it a stupid creature and stupid beast and all this stuff. And yeah, he's being a real dickwad. And he gets slashed for it, which, honestly, who can blame the poor hippogriff? So he's bleeding everywhere. He's screaming. Everyone's screaming. Hagrid's like, ah, crap. So Hagrid picks him up, is, like, bringing him, like, literally, like, holding him like a little rag doll, bringing him back to the castle. He's bleeding everywhere as they go. And things don't look good for Hagrid.
Mm-mm.
And so they head down to the castle, and later they're talking, and they're like, oh, man, guys, Hagrid, we don't want – this is Harry and a crew. Hagrid's probably going to be fired. This is really terrible. Malfoy's totally milking this for all it's worth. He's not really that hurt. There's no way he's that hurt. But they want to go see if Hagrid's okay, and they see a light on in his little hut. So they get under the invisibility cloak. They walk down. Actually, do they even do the invisibility cloak? I don't think so. They just walk down because they're like, whatever. Yeah, they just walk down because they're like, whatever. It's nighttime, but we can do whatever we want. We're on the grounds of Hogwarts. So they get there, and Hagrid is drinking and crying, which, yeah, I get it, Hagrid. I get it. And they're telling him it's okay. And they're like, have you been sacked? He's like, no, I haven't. But, you know, this is terrible, and my poor hippogriff, and my, like, I don't want to get fired, all this stuff. And then he realizes that Harry is in his cottage or his hut at night, and he shouldn't be out at night because everyone's trying to kill him. So he brings him back up to the castle, and that is the end of the chapter.
Yep.
Yes. Oh, yes. So.
I just looked at your Sybil Trelawney stuff.
Yeah, I realized that you were doing the thing, yeah. So I'm not going to do it. Okay. Don't worry about it. I realized afterwards, and I was like, oh, crap, she's doing that. So I'm not going to talk about Sybil Trelawney because you're going to talk about Sybil Trelawney.
Yeah.
Anyway, I do have a couple things, though.
Mm.
So new things this chapter were divination, which is very imprecise art or
practice. You don't say.
Yes. People aren't very good at it. Hermione thinks it's a load of BS, but Ron says that's because she's not good at it, which, not the right thing to say to Hermione.
Probably not.
And we also met hippogriffs for the first time. Hippogriffs.
Hippogriffs,
as I mentioned,
we get the job done. Never mind.
Yes. They are half eagle, half horse. They have very sharp beaks, foot-long talons. They're very proud. We talked about this before. Side note, Newt Scamander's mother bred hippogriffs, so that's kind of cool. What's that?
I wonder if that'll come up in the movie.
I wonder. Very interesting. So that's kind of all of the really new things we got. Obviously, in divination, there's like reading tea leaves and omens and all of that. We also saw Hagrid in the care of magical creatures position. And Dumbledore had previously mentioned that, and I don't think we talked about this previously when Dumbledore talked about it, did we?
I don't think so.
That Hagrid was taking the place of Professor Kettleburn, and that is Sylvanus Kettleburn, who was described as an enthusiastic and occasionally reckless man who loved dangerous creatures and studied them. And this led to many serious injuries to himself and to others, which sounds very familiar. However, he has the distinguished privilege of having 62 periods of probation during his time of employment, which is a record for Hogwarts, apparently, to this day.
Jeez.
Yeah. He was prone to underestimating the risks involved in caring for creatures, which is pretty much par for the course. He even famously had the Great Hall catch on fire because he enchanted an ashwinder to play the worm in a play. Yeah, in a play. The play was hilarious. The foundation of fair fortune. So don't have a magical creature involved in your theater productions. Which, by the way, this is the first I've heard of theater in Hogwarts. So that's kind of interesting.
I actually imagine the Ashwinder doing the worm instead of playing the worm. So.
That's what I thought first, too. But okay. Maybe maybe it was like, maybe it wasn't a play. Maybe... And maybe he was playing a song. I don't know. And he's doing that. Anyway, either way, very fascinating. At the end of his career, as Dumbledore said, he retired to spend his retirement with the rest of his limbs. The remainder of his limbs were one arm and half a leg.
Oh, Jesus Woof. Christ.
Yeah, but as a retirement gift, Dumbledore gave him a full set of enchanted wooden limbs.
So...
He's had to replace those regularly because he visits dragon sanctuaries often, and they often catch on fire.
I have a question, if you're done.
Yeah, and that is it. That is that is so, that is my question.
How come Voldemort give, spoilers, Peter Pettigrew a silver hand, but Dumbledore gave him wooden arms and legs?
Because Dumbledore is cheap. He probably whittled. Actually, he probably whittled them himself and thought he was very, like, sweet and kind. He's like, oh, I made these myself in my you know, Woodcraft for Dummies book or something like that. I think that it's not wise to give that man wooden limbs.
Well, I guess also, you wouldn't want to give him, like, pure silver either. Cause
right, because what if he, like, what? There's probably a lot of...
If he goes to a dragon's lair or whatever to visit dragons, I think fire probably solidifies.
Well, it's probably, I mean, wood does catch on fire, but it doesn't conduct heat the same way that silver would.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that would be pretty hot.
Yeah, and I think
what if he accidentally, like, scratched a werewolf? That wouldn't be very nice if he had silver claws.
Well, I was thinking more that if the silver solidified under... intense heat, then he couldn't move because it would just, like, clunk around.
Right, and he would be tragically, moltenly burned.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I was gonna give Hagrid the business for his terrible first lesson, but then hearing about this Kettleburn guy makes me think that I guess he was pretty right on the mark.
Right, like, that's the other thing. One of my questions was, like, man, like the whole, I was joking about, well, I actually wasn't joking. I was partially joking out of a deeply ironic vein, I don't know, that, you know, Trelawney has predicted a student's death every year for as long as she's been there. She's been there a while. Statistically, those students are going to die. Because, like, 62 probations? Like, that guy, man, like, he was endangering students. There's Wand Club or whatever. There's Quidditch. There's all sorts of death traps in that school.
It's got to be like a couple probations every year, right? I mean.
Right. I don't remember how long he was there for. I'm trying to remember if there was an actual length of his career.
I mean, I feel like 40 years or 30 years would be a long career at high school.
Yeah.
Right.
Man,
that's still a lot.
Shouldn't they have to maybe like run their lesson plan by somebody? You know,
that's the thing is like they have apparently no, you know, standardized like
overhead
OWLs and then NEWTS. Apparently, they don't regulate the actual curriculum. They're just like, as long as the end result is fine, I guess it's cool.
Because like. I don't know. Malfoy's definitely a jerk, and he brought that on himself. But also at the same time,
every 13-year-old is a dick.
He's 13. They're all assholes.
They are all jerks.
Like one of them is for sure gonna say something awful to the hippogriff.
100%. I'm surprised more kids didn't get their bodies slashed. I agree. Yeah. I agree. And like Trelawney, like also Trelawney, I was thinking about that as a professor. My question was, How do they let her get away with scaring kids like that? That seems bad for psyche. That seems like counseling in the making. Also, there are no counselors in Hogwarts, which also seems crazy given how many limbs are often lost.
Maybe they're doing a behind-the-scenes job. But my question was going to be, who approved the Monster Book of Monsters? Do they not have an approval process? Like, what if they chose me? Because you know how Defense Against the Dark Arts, they just seem to take whoever wants to apply for that job because it's cursed. So what if I was like, yeah, I want to use this book that is completely useless?
Well, they we don't know don't Monster Book shit. Of Monsters is useless.
No. I know that, but if I was someone that is approving books, I'd be like, no, you can't send this book that has no instructions to kids.
Literally, Hagrid has taken them to a death forest multiple times, and you're worried about approving a book list?
Yes, I still want to know about that.
This is all Dumbledore, though, right? Like, he doesn't... He's just so wacky.
He's so laissez-faire.
What a wacky guy.
He doesn't care for rules.
What a crazy dude.
Also, one of my questions is, why do they wait until third year to do divination? Like, why can't they do that other year? So, like, why is that a class that they introduce later? And why is it mandatory if it's something they introduce later? Like, why isn't it sort of, why is, like, arithmancy and all these other things that Hermione is presumably taking, we don't know because it's impossible, why are those not, like, required? How does divination become not an elective, even though it's utter nonsense?
Is it utter nonsense, well, though?
Everyone doesn't have to take divination, though.
I thought it was a required course.
No, I think they elected to it.
But they Hermione, keep doing it, even though she's terrible.
No, Hermione really? Just elected to take all of the classes, whereas Ron and Harry just picked some of the classes.
Gotcha. Because they thought it was going to be like earth science. They thought this was going to be the easy course.
Earth science. Was that earth an science easy
is always the course, and you're like, well, because the labs are very easy, Bajaya. Have you never done earth science?
I don't think I had an earth science.
That's because you probably took a more challenging course and didn't try and take the course where you had to tell shale from volcanic ash.
That sounds hard. Stop it.
No, okay. Shale is harder. Sorry.
Shale is actually not that hard. It's actually very easy to break.
For your geology podcast.
No, I meant harder than volcanic ash.
I just trying to think of a podcast name for like a rock podcast, and I couldn't think of anything. I was like, rock stars, rock of love.
That's very like, no, good. These are, rock these of are love. Reality yeah. shows. I don't think there's a show called that, so we should definitely
do that. Actually, that would be great because what if it was, now people I was looking for a Shale rock of love harder. Podcast, and then now they heard me talking about like sedimentary.
Harder than volcanic ash.
It probably is because it's ash.
Is there any more?
Come on.
Chapter? Anyway, that is it for that chapter, guys.
That's great.
I don't know if you had any questions.
No, that was those are my questions.
But that's all. That's kind of all I had. Yeah, that's what I got, guys.
All right. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you.
Bye. Hey guys.
Hello.
We just learned a lot about divination. Are you ready to learn about Sybil Trelawney?
Yeah, I'm
you know,
so
the
ready.
Professor of divination.
Who is
I'm
it?
Beyond ready.
Sybil Trelawney.
I'm ready. Do it. Let's go.
So Sybil is the great great granddaughter of a genuine seer, Cassandra Trelawney. I don't know why they call Cassandra genuine and Sybil not, but you know. So Cassandra's gift had been much diluted through the generations, although Sybil inherited more than she knew. But a lot of the stuff that she portrayed that she was capable of was really just fibs is what Pottermore calls
Fib.
Fibs about her own talent. It says, Pottermore says she is at least 90% fraud.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, that's so 10%, 10% not fraud.
Right.
What do you call it not fraud?
Truth.
Truth. But no, I mean, like, never mind. Continue. Continue.
So she cultivated a dramatic manner, and she enjoyed impressing her gullible students with prediction of doom and disaster.
Wow.
So she is gifted with what they call a fortune teller's tricks, is what you would, you know, the magicians of today that will be like, oh, I can read your palm and this is what you're going to do. You know, the person that used to have a talk show that said that he could.
Miss Cleo?
No.
Oh, Miss Cleo. No.
He could talk to the dead, and he'd be like,
the crossing over guy.
Yeah, so he could be like, oh, getting a message from someone that who died was the J, blah, blah.
I think Miss Cleo is the better comparison.
She's dead now.
she's not?
Yeah, she is. Sorry to break that news to you.
I feel like that's an internet rumor.
Okay. So she has the crossover, blah, blah, blah. So she accurately read Neville's nervousness and suggestibility in his first class. And she's like, well, he's nervous. He's obviously probably going to break a cup or two.
Yeah,
so that's what she tells him. Yeah. So on other occasions, she just tells people things and people will like draw conclusions from it. So Professor Trelawney, she tells her Lavender Brown that something she's dreading will happen on the 16th of October. Spoilers, but when Lavender receives news on that day that her pet rabbit has died,
what? Why would you tell
us that? She instantly connects it with that prediction. So she gets the news on the 16th of October, but her rabbit didn't die on that day. But she still connects the prediction to the death of her pet rabbit.
Still, it's not like a crazy coincidence.
Well, Professor Trelawney says that Lavender Brown is dreading it, but her rabbit is not old, so she would not have been dreading it anyway.
I don't know. That seems inaccurate.
Anyway, so all of Hermione's logic and good sense are lost. Lavender just wants to believe her unhappiness was foretold, and it becomes a bad thing later. So by the law of averages, Professor Trelawney's rapid fire predictions sometimes hits the mark, but most of the times she is full of hot air and self-importance. So it's almost like if I keep shooting predictions from here on out, maybe 10% of them hit and 90% of them are failures. I could be like, well, I'm true sometimes, but that doesn't mean I'm a clairvoyant.
Sure?
Anyway, nevertheless, Sybil does experience very rare flashes of genuine clairvoyance, which she can never remember afterwards.
Yeah, that's weird, eh?
Yeah. So she secured her post at Hogwarts because the night she met with Dumbledore, she was the unconscious possessor of important knowledge. We're not going to divulge into that. And then later on, she also makes another prediction. That's why, because of the thing that she told Dumbledore, the night that she met him to secure a position, the knowledge was so important that Dumbledore gave her sanctuary at school, partly to protect her, partly in the hope that the next prediction would be more genuine and there would be like more important predictions would be forthcoming. So conscious of her low status on the staff, she knows that they're more talented than her. Sybil usually spends, she knows that. She usually spends most of her time apart from her colleagues, She usually stays in her office.
It's a bummer.
And then, yeah, and then unsurprisingly, she has developed an over-reliance on alcohols.
That's really sad.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, huh. She doesn't have any friends. She doesn't have a good relationship with her coworkers. She doesn't have a good relationship with her family. What is she gonna do?
Man, that's rough.
Not that really you rough. Should abuse substance because of that, but she doesn't really have anything else or anyone else to use as her support system, I guess. So J.K. Rowling's thoughts were Professor Trelawney and Professor McGonagall's relationship. They're polar opposites. One is very logical. One is very, knowledgeable. And the other is very manipulative and grandiose. So they knew that they would, Rowling knew that they would butt heads. And when Dolores Umbridge tried to oust Sybil from the school, McGonagall, even though she was critical of Trelawney on many occasions, she showed her true kindness of her character and rallied to her defense.
That sounds like McGonagall.
Yeah, this does. She's upright.
Yeah. So Rowling says in her write-up in Pottermore that there's a pity-filled quality about Professor Trelawney, infuriating though I would find her in real life, that I think Minerva sensed her underlying feeling of inadequacy. So Rowling created detailed histories of many of the Hogwarts staff, including Dumbledore, McGonagall, and Hagrid, but she didn't create one for Trelawney. Not really a huge detail one. We did go through Minerva's?
Yeah, we did. We talked about that. We talked about McGonagall. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We did go through Minerva, so it's very, not as
very
detailed.
Very sad backstory, though.
Yeah, it's sad. So it's always, she said it's fitting that she only ever had a vague idea of what happened to Trelawney before she washed up at Hogwarts. She imagines that Sybil's pre-Hogwarts existence consisted of drifting through Wizarding World, like trying to trade on her ancestry and just kind of passing through town to town being like, oh, I was Cassandra Trelawney's. I am Cassandra Trelawney's descendant. Let me read your fortune or whatever. So Trelawney, that is a Cornish surname, apparently. And Rowling loves Cornish surnames, but had never used one until the third book, this book. So that's how the Professor Trelawney's family name came about. And she never wanted to call her anything comical, but something impressive and attractive. Just like, you know, the stature maybe the Trelawney family would have had in the Wizarding community. Yeah. So that would suggest a very old name. And there is a very beautiful old Cornish song featuring the name Trelawney called The Song of the Western Men. And her American editor wanted her to spell it S-I-B-Y-L, but she chose to spell it S-Y-B-I-L-L because it just seemed like a better name for a clairvoyant, she said.
That makes sense to me.
Don't see that second L coming.
But she says that there's also a reference to an August clairvoyant of old whose name was spelled S-Y-B-I-L, but she just felt like she needed to be spelled the other way with the two L's.
I like it.
And the Y.
Does Trelawney mean something in Cornish?
Not that I saw in Pottermore. I did not look it up.
Doesn't it sound like it would definitely be like an old-timey epic poem, like Sir Gawain ran into Trelawney the Brave, or Trelawney the Clairvoyant.
You should look up the Cornish song, The Song of the Western Men. It was featured in that song.
I will.
You should.
Okay, let's all do that.
No.
All right, well, that was awesome. Thank you so much, Pajaya.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, why don't we read some more iTunes reviews, since they're so incredibly helpful and we appreciate everyone so much for writing them for us.
You guys are the best. Thanks.
You can also do Stitcher reviews. Just saying.
What? That's awesome.
Yeah, that's a thing.
Okay. I don't know who this bad person dude is, but he says, never make Potter great again. Ugh. All right. Michael is my favorite on this podcast.
Our podcast is huge.
Wait.
What?
Keep reading.
Oh, Bajaya and Sarah are...
Wait, are his favorite.
Yeah, Michael's my favorite after and Sarah.
Okay, continue.
Michael is my favorite on this podcast, but Bajaya and Sarah are more of my favorite than Michael.
That's what he says, literally.
Yeah, that's literally what he says. That he likes Bajaya and Sarah more than Michael. That's fine.
Right.
Got it. Yeah, that's what he says. That's after Bajaya and Sarah.
I'm laughing, but it's true.
JK, they are wonderful friends who do a great job discussing the Harry Potter books and movies. I like the Harry Potter series, but I'm not crazy about it. This podcast is still very enjoyable, regardless of my personal investment in Harry Potter. Now, if only Michael would stop complaining about being...
I think you should read it as it is.
Such a baby.
I think you should read it as it is.
He were through about being such a baby. Dear listeners, this is Sarah. I would like to just quickly break the fourth wall here and say that I am looking at a ever evolving Google Doc that is just Michael and Bajaya. Copy, pasting, deleting, copy, paste, delete, 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 copy, paste, of a certain line from this review, which I shall not read.
But I'm really glad
love each other.
Yeah, you know, I'm really glad that Bapper finally admitted that Michael is a big whiny baby. Love the show, says
me too.
LD Ledonant from Canada. Good day, mates.
do you think they're from London, Canada?
Maybe.
There is actually a London, Ontario. Canada. There is
London. Yeah, I know. Yeah. That's this person's name, though.
Their person's name is
LDNONT is his name. Anyway.
Wow. He says, London.
They say, recovering from a concussion. Oh, I hope you're better, so I can't read or watch.
Oh, I feel better.
So listening to this has been great, getting me through the day. You guys are awesome. I hope you're feeling better.
Oh, we're helping someone.
Kinsey Elise says...
Also, be restful. Yeah. Don't be careful typing. I don't know.
Kinsey Elise says, love listening. Harry Potter is one of my favorite and most read book series, and this podcast has been so much fun to listen to. Thank you, Kinsey. Perry Dot says, this podcast will cast a laughing spell on you. Take the Hogwarts Express and get sorted into Geekly Inc. Yay, thank you for all that.
Yes. Is this
Puddlefoot?
Is that a plug for GeeklyCon 2017?
Maybe, man. That was reviews from October 11th are pretty smart.
They're so smart. They took divination and they saw in their tea leaves that GeeklyCon 2017 was going to be the best and you should go get your tickets right now.
Yeah. Get sorted. You can get sorted into a house.
Can I just say, you're going to get sorted into a house. No, but you'll get sorted into a house. There are 5 houses. I feel like I need to shout out about the GeeklyCon thing because we had a fun panel last year, and I'm not going to brag, but we're kind of awesome.
Yeah, it is one of my favorite moments, if not my favorite moment from last GeeklyCon.
It was very fun. So
it was very good.
So get your GeeklyCon.com. We'll see you in St. Louis.
Meet me in St. Louis. I'm going to sing a lot of Judy Garland, guys. Sorry.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us for You're a Wizard, Harry. Want to help out? Go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating and review. Want to get in touch? Email us at potterpod@geeklyinc.com or follow us on Twitter at potterpod or geeklyinc. And individually, you can find me at ThriftyNerd.
I'm Bajaya Shrestha, and you can find me on Twitter at EthnicNinja.
I am Sarah Tompkins, and you should hit me up at HerLadyTompkins.
Editing help this week by Alan Matthews. Our podcast art is created by Jesse Carlton. You can find more of his work at J! On Instagram. And our music is created by Sean Fagan. Find more of his music at soundcloud.com/sleepyfish. Thank you.